It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff and Stacy are here, and we've got lots to talk about. Jeff has been following the Senate and congressional hearings from Facebook and Google and Twitter. He'll have his take on that. Plus, why all those ideas from the New York Times on improving Facebook are terrible. Stacy's going to talk about, of course, the Internet of Things and her new Amazon Echo. Plus, we'll debate the merits of queso. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 429, recorded Wednesday, November 1st, 2017. Case off. This Week in Google is brought to you by Video Blocks by Storyblocks. Uncage your creativity. Get all the stock video you need for only $149 a year. Visit videoblocks.com/twig to save on millions of studio quality clips from Video Blocks. And by Sonic, Twit's 10 gigabit fiber internet service provider. Join Sonic's internet revolution as they bring fast, affordable internet, phone, and TV to homes and businesses all over California. Visit sonic.com/twit to sign up for service and receive your first month free. And by Capterra. Find software solutions for your business needs. Capterra is a free website with over 400 categories of business software and thousands of ratings and reviews from software users just like you. Visit capterra.com/twig today. It's time for Twig This Week at Google, a show where we cover the Senate hearings going on right now because it's Google, Facebook, and Twitter. We cover the state of journalism because we have two premier journalists on the show. It is always a fun show. Welcoming back Jeff Jarvis from his trip, his travels.
Wherever I was, I can't even remember.
He dressed up for us. Look at this. What a nice.
I can dress up. I can look.
You were on TV earlier today.
Well, I was supposed to be on MSNBC talking about the hearings.
But now they're not talking about anything, of course. But.
Exactly. As I'm driving in, no surprise, I get the message at 6 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Nope. You're preempted by the terror attack in New York, which understandable fully.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah, they don't send a car for you, Jeff?
I live way the hell out, then I can't get back home.
So they'll send the car to get you, but not to send to bring you back.
They send cars for me, and then they take me home. It's very exciting.
Aren't you people
I've got to
fancy.
Work during the day. I then work all day.
Oh, and then he has no way to get home. I get it. They would take you back to CUNY.
I suspect they would just get me a car to go home, but it's too much. Yeah. It's too embarrassing.
Yeah.
That is embarrassing. I agree.
Anyway, good to have you back. We missed you. Although I have to say, having Stacy in studio was so exciting and such a thrill. It was really great to meet you. Stacy Higginbotham, formerly of GigaOM for many years. She's now doing her own thing, and it's a great thing. Stacy on IoT.com. She also has a podcast with Kevin Toefel about the Internet of Things at GigaStacy. Hello, Stacy. Back in your home. So you can root for your Astros, which is good.
It is. I'm very excited.
Game 7 tonight of what has been one of the most exciting World Series I can remember. It's really been good.
I'm very excited about it. I'm not even that into sports, but I've been watching this in Stranger Things on and off all last week.
our local team, the San Francisco Giants, have been so bad this year, so horrifically bad this year that they were out of contention even before the All-Star break. So I kind of didn't pay attention to baseball, but now I'm excited. Both the Astros and the Dodgers are 100-game winners. These are very, very good teams, and it is a very, very good World Series. But that's all the sport ball talk for today. when Stacy came here, by the way, Jeff, we did something.
I'm so mad I wasn't there.
We ordered Chipotle for everybody, and we, of course, got a tub of queso. Because Stacy had never had it. You complained how grainy it is.
It is friggin' awful.
You are not alone, by the way. Everybody hates Chipotle queso.
It is dreadful.
Stacy, tell me
you did not say anything nice about this crap.
It was not grainy. I didn't taste the graininess, which, thank God, because ugh.
That may be how it's prepared too, right? Because that sounds like
they take it out of the thing and they pour it. No, it's how they make it. It's awful. I just put up a picture on the rundown of what queso ought to be.
like this.
No, not that junk. You can just tell. It's just, it's wallpaper paste. It's grainy. It's so soupy. It's milky. It's thin.
I thought it was pretty good, actually.
Oh, God, it's awful.
Stacey, what did you
think? I didn't think it was that bad. It's not high quality queso, but well, I will say, I've gone to Taco Cabana at 2 a.m. and gotten queso that is only slightly better than that. And I would still pay for that.
Now I'm wondering about Jeff, because this image of queso you're giving us from Moe's.
Wait, that's your queso, Jeff? That looks
well,
so watery.
Compared, yes.
No, that's Velveeta. Jeff, this is not queso.
No, that's not even Velveeta. That's like watered down Velveeta.
No, Jeff. Jeff needs to be edumacated.
After tweeting this, yeah. Guess what I got in the mail?
It says queso is life.
That's true.
I
seriously thought about creating a queso/mole Tumblr, and no one sends me T-shirts about queso in the mail. This is very distressing. Stacey,
you would deserve it if you had any real taste on queso. If you could even tolerate that drivel.
Wait a minute.
How could you do anything less than go running out in the streets screaming about what they did to queso? It ruined queso.
Again, not the best queso, but definitely not the worst.
And better than whatever that was you tweeted. That did not look good at all.
I would have to taste this Moe's queso to see, because just the picture.
Then we're going
to
have a case off.
Sounds good. A case off.
Have a case off. The other thing we have to try, which I still have the jar in the pantry, which we talked about once before, is the Trader Joe's fat-free queso.
Jeff. Queso doesn't come in a jar.
See, I'm just really glad that queso's a Tex-Mex thing, because you can't get queso in Northern California. Chipotle's the first. I didn't even know about queso till I went to Austin, Texas. And by the way, my reaction was, oh my God, where have you been all my life? I mean,
no.
Queso is good, but I'm glad they don't have queso here, because I would be even fatter than I already am.
But it's ruined. Well, you're not going to get fat on Chipotle queso, that's for sure, because it's awful. It's terrible.
I liked it. Terrible. I thought it was delicious.
And by the way, all the nice things we ever did for Chipotle, they ever send us a nice Chipotle T-shirt?
Actually,
no.
But
no,
we did have the digital marketing guy from Chipotle came to visit the studio. And he gave us like a bunch of coupons. So
Oh yeah.
We've got free Chipotle for a while. I don't know if the one we had when Stacey was here last week was free, but I'm writing down.
And who started the whole Chipotle thing on the show, huh?
You and Gina.
Stacey, right. I admired you. I trusted you. I respected you.
Now
you had credibility.
Now everything you say is in question from now on.
It's all wrong.
How could you not have just dumped that crap on the curb?
It wasn't mine to dump.
First of all, the
chips were bad, though. The chips were bad.
Well, they weren't good, but they weren't warm, fresh out of the oven or anything. I mean,
no, they were stale and they were too thin. You need a more substantial chip with a little bit more. Like, that's actually the biggest objection I had on that bite of queso was the chip.
You're diverting.
I'm not just diverting. But
here in California, we prefer guacamole to queso. If you're going to put something on a chip.
Okay. My freshman 15. In Austin, you can buy a bowl of queso with a giant scoop of guacamole in it.
Oh, God.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my God.
It's so good.
Is it right next to the cardiologist?
Oh, my God.
I used probably 3 nights a week, we would go in and get that. Plus, it was 2-for-1 short stacks of pancakes at Kirby Lane.
Oh, no wonder. That's 15 pounds a week for me.
Oh, it was fantastic. But I was like, what is happening with my body? Why am I gaining so much weight? And then I was like, queso and pancakes.
Jeff did, we have to say, pick the best pizza in the United States officially for People Magazine? Or
for People Magazine.
For People Magazine. So this is not an amateur here.
I have a professional experience at this.
I really think we might have to do a case-off.
I think we have to do a case-off. It got us. It got us a show title, if nothing else.
Yeah, I wrote it down.
So coming to Austin for South by, we'll start it.
Oh, I'd love to. Oh,
we're beyond that now.
I love the barbecue in Austin. Actually, I never have the Tex-Mex. Well, no, we do. We always go when we go.
There's that place.
There's that place.
Well, we had Brazilian in Austin.
Yeah, that was a mistake, but that's that's okay. That was the dinner of all the people who would come down for us, and Jeff
cost you a fortune.
It did cost quite a bit.
At the Cherusky, meat on swords place?
Yeah.
How do you say that?
Not Cherusky.
Cherusky.
That's the Polish meat on swords.
That's the Polish. All the kielbasa you can eat.
I don't know. But it turns out it's a chain, and we even have one in San Francisco.
Fogo de Chao. Yeah. It's right across the street.
Fogo de Chao.
Stacey, I'll send you the cup.
Here. Queso is life.
Queso is life. Okay. You can fill it with that junk.
You know what? I have all the queso I need, like not even 5 minutes for me. It's so good. Also,
stop rubbing it in. But I was jealous, but now I don't know, Stacey. Now I don't know.
I will bring you to great queso places.
All right. This is I think a world queso tour. Do they even have queso in Mexico? No, it's an American thing. I'm sure it's Tex-Mex.
It's probably a Tex-Mex thing because Tex-Mex is yellow cheese, beans, and beef.
Okay.
Whoa, Facebook just announced third quarter profit jumped 79%.
This has been a very, very good quarter for the tech companies. Google's results, superb. Microsoft's results, we were talking about it earlier on Windows Weekly, the best quarterly net revenues in more than a decade. Apple will have its quarterly results soon. I'm sure they'll be, and again. It's been a really, really good tech sector quarter. And really, I think we can call it the Trump bump because all across the board, stocks are up. Consumer confidence is up. Employment is up. He's a damn fine president.
I'm sorry. Is Jeff's head spinning around?
I was trying.
The queso stuff's even worse. that's how bad that is. Even worse.
Before the show, we were watching, and I'm still watching, the Razer phone announcement. This is an interesting development. Razer, which is known for gaming accessories and gaming laptops, R-A-Z-E-R, this is not the Motorola Razer. This is a new phone from the gaming company, acquired, you may remember, Nextbit. They were a crowdsourced phone, which I got and I liked, the Nextbit Robin. And they acquired that team, which included some people who had worked for Google on Android. And they developed in-house an Android TV device called the Ouya. Both those teams worked together to make a $699 phone, which they're announcing today, which is primarily for gaming, but will also have, I don't know why the quality is so poor on this. Maybe I've set something wrong on, let me look at the settings. Quality is auto right now. Let me turn it up. This is their keynote in London, which is going on right now.
That has a great accent.
Yeah. I'm not sure who he is. I presume he's the CEO of Razer. They say will be available November. No, reservations are available today, and it'll be shipping November 17th. So this is really interesting. The competition has heated up, not just in Android, but with people who have iPhone 8s are now looking at the iPhone 10s, which start coming on Friday. And actually, I want to talk a little bit about how Apple's very interesting Apple marketing strategy and the way although others disagree, Andy and I got in a fight over it yesterday on MacBreak Weekly, manipulated the media, the Apple press, in an interesting way. And then Google's two new phones, the Pixel 2 and the Pixel 2 XL, are out. But now this phone, out of nowhere, stock Android, it's going to have a giant 4,000 milliamp hour battery, which does respond, I think, to the people who've been hating, frankly, on modern phones because of poor battery life. A special screen that gives you 120 hertz resolution. It's a gaming, focused on gaming phone. And interestingly, they'll use the Nova Launcher as their launcher, which I think really, in a way, is a very good idea. It's the launcher that many Android aficionados choose to use instead of Pixels, the Google Pixel Launcher and others. So
What's the main thing that makes it a gaming phone?
The 120 hertz refresh rate.
Okay.
Apple does something similar on iPads. They can get up to 200 hertz, I think, on iPads, but it's only when it senses that it's needs it or something. I don't know exactly how it works. It doesn't normally sit there. It normally sits at the normal 60 hertz. So this is twice as fast refresh rate. They're really pushing that. They bought THX, so it's going to have THX sound, front-facing dual speakers. They call it the ultimate entertainment phone, and it's unlocked $699, which makes it very competitive. I think with some of the other, it's a unibody aluminum phone with the Razer logo on the back, dual cameras. You know, I don't know whose software they're going to use for the camera. It's a Snapdragon 835. It has 8 gigs of RAM, which is, again, over, you know, way over spec. Micro SD slot, no headphone jack, Type-C charger, and there is a dongle that's THX certified in the box for 24-bit sound, high-res audio. Which actually is probably a good idea. An analog jack on the phone isn't maybe the best way to do that. So this analog jack?
What's that?
What is that? Nobody's doing that anymore. 711, although they say Oreo before the end of the year. A 12 and a 13 megapixel cameras on the back, one wide angle, one zoom, and 8 megapixel on the front.
Why wouldn't they put a headphone jack on this? Because honestly, Bluetooth sound qualities, I know they're improving the codecs, but...
I know.
I mean...
That's good point. You know, they're pushing the sound. I agree. Although, you know, you can hardwire a phone, headphones into it through their dongle.
Yeah, but...
Why don't you just take $50 from me now, just as a tax, for all the dongles up high?
The dongle's just... Like, I feel like such an... idiot walking around with my phone with the dongle still hanging on it.
Keep the dongle on the headphones. That would be tip number one.
Like when I travel, I swap between my normal headsets and the noise canceling headsets. And so is it ideal? No. But and also I grabbed the wrong dongle before I went up to the studio and then I was just so frustrated.
And you can't charge unless you buy the really expensive one.
Yeah, I was feeling very... tech is failing me right now.
I agree with Nilay Patel, who said it's user hostile. He was talking about Apple doing it. But
that's a good phrase, yeah.
It's user hostile. And unfortunately, Apple and Google are doing it, and now so is Razer. I mean, this has become the...
Does the Essential have a headphone jack?
No, no headphone jack on the Essential either.
Everyone's
doing it. If you wanted to buy a hip pair of headphones with a USB-C, those don't exist, right?
They do, but I mean, yeah, I know. You know, good luck finding them.
What kind of quality?
It was the Essential shipped with USB-C headphones, but there mustn't be a standard because I tried them on other devices with USB-C ports, and there's no audio coming out of
really?
It. Really? Well, I don't know. I don't know what that means, but so there you go. That's kind of the breaking news today, and then the Senate is having hearings.
The House just ended theirs.
The House ended theirs in the Senate now, or that was just the House?
Senate was yesterday, House today. I've watched most of both of them.
So I do want to talk about that because I think those are interesting. Yesterday was the general counsel for Facebook, Twitter, and Google who faced the Senate and really didn't say much. But you probably watched it. I was busy working, so I didn't get to watch it.
I know you were.
What did they say? What happened?
Oh, I mean, not much happened. It's just, you know, my overall impression is, for God help us, if these people, the government people, end up running the internet, they're just ignorant. We might as well talk about pipes and tubes, and a lot of hostility from both left and right to the platforms. It's very easy target right now. It really struck me how the platform should have come out, been way ahead of this. And this is Silicon Valley hubris, really hurts them. They should have been way, way ahead of us and set new standards.
It was a Senate committee, right? Which committee? Was it the Intelligence Committee?
It's the Intelligence Committee. There was a Senate, and it was a subcommittee of the Senate. And I think it was the...
I think it's the House Intelligence Committee.
Intelligence Committee. Yeah.
And the idea is that they want to know, well, did you help Russia meddle in U.S. politics, essentially, right?
So
Al Franken, go ahead, Stacey, go ahead.
I've been covering these things for a decade now. So I have watched many a tech getting raked over the coals by Congress, members of Congress in these hearings. These are not, what's the word theater. Theater. Yeah. Yes, they're political theater.
Grandstanding might be the word.
They're grandstanding. Yes. So the thing to know about this is basically Congress getting to say their talking points and yelling at these companies. This is not going to result in anything substantive. What happens substantively happens behind closed doors with the lobbyists for these companies and the aides in the Senate, you know, the aides for the senators and representatives. So I would caution folks from reading too much into this.
Let me give you a couple of quotes from yesterday's hearings. This is Senator Mark Warner of Virginia. I hear all your words, but I have more than a little bit of frustration that many of us on this committee have been raising this issue, the issue of Russian, influencing the election, since the beginning of this year, and our claims are frankly blown off by the leadership of your companies and dismissed. That's true. Facebook denied it for more than a year. We've raised these claims since the beginning of the year, and the leaders of your companies blew us off. Your earliest presentations showed a lack of resources, a lack of genuine effort, a lack of commitment. Dianne Feinstein said, I don't think you get it. What we're talking about is a cataclysmic change. What we're talking about is the beginning of cyber warfare. You have a huge problem on your hands. Ron Wyden said, we'd like to walk out of here knowing the changes you're going to support. Senator Burr, chairman of the committee, suggested Congress should supply the companies with antitrust waivers because, of course, collaboration might be considered collusion. So they would need, to have some sort of indemnification.
But they already do share a lot and so they brag about that.
Now, admittedly, you're right. These are talking points. Senators are grandstanding. But I don't disagree with those points. Do you?
Yeah, the problem is that it's. Go ahead, Stacey.
No, go ahead. Okay.
No, you go.
There's two things here. One is Congress is pushing all the blame under the tech companies, which may or may not be fair, but they're also refusing to look at and analyze what it means that these companies are international in scope, even though they're based here in the US. And so if they're saying, okay, you guys need to do better to prevent, Russia from hacking our elections or overly unduly influencing things, they're forgetting that Facebook, Google and Twitter may have conflicting goals in Russia. So I think they're ignoring the real issues here, which I think we should be talking about.
But Facebook's participation in Russia doesn't mean that they should allow Russians to buy ads in political ads in America. I understand that when they're in Russia, they have to follow the laws of Russia and stuff. But when the Internet Research Agency, Russia's troll factory, spends rubles to buy ads on Facebook influencing the U.S. election, which is illegal, how can Facebook say, we didn't know?
Well, let's talk about that. Because, Al Franken, who I generally like, use that for major theater to go after him. Rubles. Okay, well, there's 5 million advertisers a month on Facebook. I'm not trying to just defend Facebook here. Facebook needs to do more. But how could this happen? Well, they can't. As Stacey said, it's such theater. You can't actually answer this. You just have to throw yourself on the ground, prostrate, and say, okay, I'm sorry.
Well, Facebook says we're doubling from 10,000 to 20,000, the number of people who are involved in ferreting this out. But they also said that this troll factory reached 150 million people, 150 million Americans through Facebook.
Million. Oh, I see.
No, the new number. Instagram, this is the new number. It was 126 million.
Okay,
now,
let's talk about a few things here. One, the ad was bought in rubles. Well, this is an international company that sells things all around the world. If they weren't looking for that signal, if they weren't aware that we need to be looking for political ads bought with rubles, they're not going to find that. It's not like, somebody's there looking at all 5 million advertisers every minute. They had to be aware that this was a problem. They weren't. Maybe they were stupid.
Okay.
But that's point one. Right?
Wait a minute. Yeah. I agree that it's ridiculous to say, well, we're going to play a blame game at this point. What's completely reasonable is for these senators to say, well, what are you going to do now? And there's one very simple thing, which is to add transparency. And these companies seem to be
dragging. And they're saying they're doing that. Now, I think they've got to be My standard for transparency is every political ad, every political ad buyer, and the targeting data for all of them should be public.
Yes.
And searchable.
Is that what Facebook's doing?
That's what I think they said they're doing. At first they didn't. I think they are now. I don't know. I don't have the latest statement on this, but that's my standard for what they need to do. Now, mind you, there is no required transparency in political advertising in print, none on billboards, none in direct mail, none in robocalls. Is on broadcast.
Oh, okay. So print, you don't have to disclose who bought? Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, that's
interesting. You don't have to disclose. The paper didn't have to disclose a thing.
They should change that for newspapers, too.
This is where we're going to get to the First Amendment, ladies and gentlemen. So
the First Amendment does not protect foreign governments from interfering in our politics. That's illegal, and it's not protected by the First Amendment.
Fine. If a foreign government buys a fake ad, is it up to the newspaper to know that? That it went through five shell companies?
No.
If somebody buys a fake ad,
they need to be transparent. That's all.
Well, but transparent. Yeah, I know, and I agree with that. I just said that they should be fully transparent. But let's remember, the transparency is also going to be limited because it goes through shell companies. They're trolls.
Let the press do their job, and be transparent, and let the press figure it out.
We're agreeing and yelling at each other.
Y'all are.
But. Beware putting a legal requirement in this area. I mean, broadcast is there because it's our airwaves and all that. The rest is a matter of the First Amendment in terms of what laws. Listen, if
the good news is newspapers are dying anyway, so we don't care about print.
Second
That's
point.
The good news.
Second point. The fact that they got 126 or 150 million people to see supposedly this stuff from this one Russian fake news factory, the IRA, the Internet Research Agency. What does that indicate? It indicates that a hell of a lot of your neighbors passed this stuff around. That wasn't the advertising. That was the organic. That was content that people passed around. Now, bots had a role too. The ads had a role too. All that had a role. But we got a bigger problem here, folks, which is that your fellow citizens are passing this crap around. Point three.
I don't think that's as much of a problem. And by the way, million? I'm looking at the Federal Election Commission's website, and disclaimer notices are required of broadcast, newspaper, magazine, outdoor advertising, mass mailing, and telephone banks.
Of the political campaign, when it is for a candidate. Wait, when it's for a candidate. Most of this advertising was for issues.
A communication that solicits funds for a federal candidate or federal political committee that contains or that contains express advocacy
Of a political campaign.
Yeah.
I can go advocate for equal rights for all human beings.
Right.
I don't have to.
So that's part of the problem with some of these ads is they don't even mention a candidate.
90% of them. Yeah. 90% of them are, and they're trying to sow discord by going after race. The real problem to me is that media need to learn a lesson here. We just still say, oh, come and read our articles. We'll wait for you over here. While the bad guys are using Facebook and company natively.
Well, see, that's
Facebook
why I don't even mind
us how to use them natively.
I don't think it really matters so much about print because the real problem is these programmatic ads that are bought and automatically displayed, the kind of granularity that can happen, and the fact that they're dark ads. You know, if an ad's in a newspaper, everybody sees it, but dark ads are shown only to specific people. And no one else sees them. So really, it's an internet problem more than it is.
It's also, it's direct mail. It's been the case ever since direct mail.
Yeah, I guess direct mail would be the same, right?
Right. So I'm not taking Facebook off the hook. What I'm saying is that Facebook and Twitter and Google should set a standard far beyond that of broadcast. They have a public responsibility. They should have been ahead of this. The only reason they're sitting there is because the hubris of Silicon Valley said, oh, we don't have a problem. We don't have a problem. Zuckerberg said, we don't have a problem. They had a problem. And they should have been out front saying, this is what we know, this is what we don't know. And we're being manipulated. They could have been the story. The Russians could have been the story rather than them. So they messed up big time. I'm not defending them there. But my bigger point is, when you listen to these dorks, ignorant fools in Congress, I dread what they do to the internet. Trey Gowdy was just on in the House hearing, pushing hard against the platforms, against Facebook. Well, if I say it's Thursday and it's not, how should that be allowed? Are lies constitutionally protected? And the Facebook lawyer says, yes, the Supreme Court has actually said yes, because they doesn't get our own constitution. If lies are not allowed, then whether it's a court or it's Facebook or it's Trey Gowdy says this is a lie and you can't say that, that's a limitation on speech from a government level. And our own member of Congress doesn't understand
the First Amendment. Yeah, although there's a long history of Congress not understanding the First Amendment, going right back to the
Amen. So to me, the basis, the very beginning, moral, the whole story is you don't want these people controlling the internet. So Facebook platforms, Google, Facebook, get your damned acts together and get ahead of them. Otherwise, they're going to be on your asses regulating our net.
What I would like to see, I feel like I should applaud you, Jeff, there. But what I would like to see it's more just like very impassioned. I would like to see a database that maybe all of these, I mean, the Federateds, the Outbrains, Facebook, et cetera, feed into with political ads, like a database that says, hey, this ad, and gives the context or the article or the whatever was paid for and promoted, put it in a database somewhere or make it basically accessible via an API. So reporters could actually go in and look at trends.
Yeah. That's a great idea. So do it across all of these platforms.
The problem is not every ad's political, Stacey. I mean, ads that sway the election aren't necessarily overtly political.
So we can see, I mean, we've got to start somewhere. I would say the things to look out for and the language that you'd pay attention to if anyone tried to create something like this would be, how do we define what makes it in there, right? Is it paid advertisement? Yeah. How do we define an issue? But two, how do we make sure that it's open? Because I can see Facebook creating something like this in-house. And I would love for companies not, I mean, you can't file a FOIA request with Facebook. So how do you make that? How do you make it really easily accessible? And I feel like, honestly, our government is falling so far behind when they're thinking about legislation, when we just look at their open records requests, when we look at their digitization efforts. And I think these are very interrelated. In those kind of tools, we blame the media a lot. But what Facebook has done and what Russia and everyone took advantage of is the fact that we can scale up falsehoods and micro-target them in a way that the media can't even track. So we can't, the fourth estate, as it were, can't do its job because it doesn't have the same ability. So I would like to see the creation of that and then reporters getting good at using those tools and Congress making it a little easier.
Too.
And academics. Academics are doing some really good things and they work around. I mean, they reverse engineer a lot of this stuff, actually. So
I don't want to just see the ads. Very importantly, I want to see the targeting data.
Yes.
So who's being targeted with what messages?
Facebook has said, and this is their post from October 27th, a couple of days ago, additional transparency for all advertising, not just political
all
ads,
advertising.
All advertising.
All advertising.
Starting next month, people will be able to click on view ads on a page and view the ads of pages running on Facebook, Instagram, and Messenger, whether or not the person viewing is the intended target audience. That's a good step.
Yep. That's a big step.
Yeah. All pages will be part of this effort. And we require that all ads be associated with a page. So in other words, this covers every ad. So there's no ads that are not parts of a page. They're going to start this in Canada, roll it
out
in the U.S.
by summer.
This goes
beyond broadcast. This is a big deal. If they'd done this before, they were called before Congress. If they'd done this before there was a law proposed, they would have beaten her in the punch. Not the Congress still wouldn't want to, you know, make hay out of beating them up, but they could have been in a much stronger position.
And by the way, I don't think any legitimate advertiser would have any complaint against this. If as in this example, Jasper's Market, and somebody comes to your page and says, I'd like to see all the ads from Jasper's Market, nothing wrong with that.
Well, you know, here's the thing. If you are a consumer brand, package brand, let's say advertiser, and you're trying to A/B test.
This,
pictures and products.
That's not going to affect your A/B testing. That's too small. No, who's going to do that? Only people who
argument from the brands will be, the competitors will go, and they all have sophisticated ways to find out what's going on, blah, 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 blah.
Well, so what? That improves competition.
I agree with you.
I'm all for it.
We need to figure out how to instill trust. And transparency is the first step to trust, and we've got to be aggressive about it.
Right, so is there more? Do you guys both agree this is a not only a good first step, but this might be all Facebook needs to do, and Twitter and Google should do the same thing?
I would like to make sure that it's accessible to everyone. I would like to be able to pull this data in easily.
Yeah, I like the API idea. I agree.
Internet API.
But, you know, if you can't scrape these pages, for example, a lot of sites don't let you scrape legally. Right. So if I wanted to actually aggregate meaningful data across Facebook, I would have to use a scraper and, you know, run through all these ad pages. And that would be both against their terms of service and time consuming as a reporter.
Right.
So there's, I would like just a step further. I would like just that little step to make it easier to aggregate this. And I know that people on the web hate that, but that's kind of, they're using it. It's using the same tools they do to police them basically as in the media.
So let me ask you both another question. Just litmus testing here. So Jackie Speier, representative from California, all but ordered Google to pull RT off of YouTube. What do you think of that?
No.
So talk about that.
I don't believe the government should dictate what content makes it on what platforms.
So Twitter pulled down Twitter pulled down Sputnik and RT, right?
Yeah.
Because those are widely considered propaganda arms of the Russian government.
But I can't stand them, and I've been asked to be on RT and I refuse. So I think they're awful.
You could make the argument that Fox News is a propaganda arm of the US government. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that should I agree with you that this probably
Troubling.
Yeah, it's troubling.
And I wonder, by the way, the precedent we set here that I tweeted this and nobody's answered. I wonder whether Voice of America and the State Department and the CIA
also propaganda
advertise.
Yeah.
Deutsche Welle, BBC have international outreach. Putin can consider the BBC propaganda for democracy.
Yeah.
My point is the precedents we set are dangerous. And in the hearings from both sides, I'm not doing false balance here, but I heard it from both, was basically another way to demonize foreigners.
Is it
foreign?
Oh, yeah, they're foreigners.
There shouldn't be allowed.
So the fact
no, we need to be more international.
So Fox is protected because they're a domestic operation. They're protected by the First Amendment. Is RT protected by the First Amendment? No. Because it's out of the Russia, is it?
Well, no, they have an operation here,
right?
No, they're protected by the First Amendment.
Okay, what Representative Speier suggests is a violation of the Constitution. No,
if she makes it happen, yes, it is. Now, if YouTube decides to take it down on its own, then no, that's YouTube. YouTube has the right to edit.
As editing a private is part of entity, free speech. They can do that.
A private entity can do that. But now we have Congress pressuring YouTube what they should and shouldn't put in their platform.
Well, and we should underscore that what Stacey described is an API so that the press, that all of this transparency is meaningless unless we have a strong free press. Because we expect the press to do the homework and reveal. Because maybe an individual would do it, but then they become the press, in effect. So that's the strong free press is important. So you don't want to see it undermined, even to the point where they say, well, we're going to ban propaganda arms for foreign nations. No.
And the other
you could brand it a propaganda arm and let
people decide.
Let people decide.
But you also have to, the strong free press also has to be better at doing its job. And I know I harp on my own people here, but somebody has to. I go back to the 150 million, 126, 150 million people. We don't take our journalism to where the people are. The manipulators do. We don't inoculate the public against the lies that we know are going to come from the manipulators.
Yeah, they have to come to
you. And so there's a real problem here in the architecture and structure of that fourth estate.
I don't think people... I think that's a part of the problem, but I do think the good stories make it out to the people. But I also think that journalists are we're not doing our jobs. We are not learning how to access data widely. We are not learning how to write compelling stories. I mean, I love 538.
Yeah.
But my God, some of their stuff is so didactic. I'm like, ugh, kill me now. So we have to, as journalists, figure out how to pull the data and turn it into a compelling story. We know the story. I mean, journalists were aware of Russian influence on Facebook in the elections, right? They just couldn't figure out how to get the data they needed to tell that story. And it was very much a data-oriented story. And I feel like there are some J schools that are not doing a great job at teaching journalists how to think this way. I think journalists often in newsrooms don't have the time to allocate towards training people and making them better. And there's also the mentality of, you know, just send people click farming, basically.
Yes, yeah, that's a larger problem is the business model, which motivates us to go for clicks, not for understanding, not for value. And even, you know, I was at a World Economic Forum event today, and I'm also, there was a time when we said, let's get past clicks and get to attention. Attention will be good. People are realizing that, no, attention is just as corrupting and just as bad. What are the metrics? What are the goals of media and journalism? What are we here to do? We have a bigger
truth
problem.
Truth to power. So
we can't just, amen, we can't just blame, what I fear is happening is we're blaming the technology companies. And the technology companies, being hubristic and being secretive, are bringing it on themselves. But there's going to be danger to the internet, number one, because government's going to come in and do stupid stuff. And number two, we're not looking at ourselves in an honest mirror and seeing what we have to do and what role we have. I think we need a truth and reconciliation commission for media and platforms after this election, not because Trump got elected, but because the quality of discourse in this country is suffering badly. We all have a role in it.
And I would also say that journalists, I mean, the tech media is not great because we tend to laud tech companies, but journalists need to, I mean, like, I don't know a single journalist out there who, when you mention an oil company, doesn't immediately assume that they're being lied to about many things if it comes from like an oil company executive. But they hear Facebook say something, and to a point, this is better, but they think, oh, okay, yeah, Facebook. So I think there's also a lack of we were too trusting. We were like, oh, Facebook, you got to do this yourselves. But really, as a journalist, Stacey, you just got to say.
You know what's happening? I think we're getting an overreaction the other way now. We're getting a downright moral panic. Mike Godwin's been talking about how we're in a moral panic right now, which he defines as when the public isn't really upset, but media and politicians try to convince them they should be upset. That's a moral panic. Look at the New York Times yesterday, which I thought had a horrendous piece, which was how to fix Facebook. Number one, that's the New York Times saying Facebook is broken. I don't think most of the users think it's broken. Number two, 7 out of the 9 ideas in it were just absolutely absurd and stupid.
Let's take a break. I might want to look at what's wrong with Facebook and what the 9 experts, Farhad Manjoo and Kevin Roos, who both of whom are tech journalists, right?
And some of the ideas were good, but some of the ideas were really awful. But you want to go to a commercial.
Yeah, save that sigh for 1 minute from now. I want to hear what you have to say, Stacey.
Hold your breath, Stacey, this entire time.
Yeah, yeah. Don't
turn
blue.
Sigh.
Your hair can turn blue, but not you. Our show today brought to you by Video Blocks by Storyblocks. We all know that good video clips, good sound effects, a big hero image on your blog make a big difference to the quality and to the readership and to the enjoyment both you and your readers will have. So this is what I want to tell you about, because normally it costs so much money to get great stock footage. Video Blocks from Storyblocks. Video Blocks. Download all the stock footage you could ever want. Their member library has 115,000 studio quality HD videos, After Effects templates, motion backgrounds, and more. And it's all royalty free, of course. You can use it for commercial or personal projects, and everything you download is yours to keep and use forever. There's no time limit. There always are new clips going up. There's always something fresh to download. All of that for $149 a year. Many other sites you'd pay that much a month or a week. No, this is a year, $149 unlimited access, unlimited downloads. You pay that and you don't have to worry for a whole year. You just use all you can eat. Plus, if that weren't enough, they've also got a marketplace. And I love how they do this marketplace. This is the original artists selling their stuff to you directly. They take 100% of the sale price. That's more than 5 million additional videos. So the Video Blocks does not take a cut of this. This goes right into the pocket of the artists, which I love. I love supporting that. And as a member, you get 40% off. So, I mean, there is no reason not to do this. We were using another service. We switched immediately, and it has saved us thousands of dollars already. No, from now on, no more old or outdated footage. No more watermarks if you're just downloading it and using it. No. Pay for it. 90,000 customers. NBC, National Geographic, the History Channel, the Travel Channel, all use Video Blocks footage. You should too. Go to videoblocks.com/twig. And you'll get all the stock video you'd ever need for one flat $149 a year rate. That is a great deal. And 40% off the marketplace, which adds millions more clips. Videoblocks.com/twig. Save on millions of studio quality clips. Great stuff for the best price anywhere. Really love this. Video Blocks by Storyblocks. Go to videoblocks.com/twig. We thank them for their support.
I need that for my students.
Oh, yes. I mean, I don't know if you've priced out any of the other companies, but it's really expensive. And usually you often pay per clip, which, I mean, if you know, that really is an inhibition against using them. But yeah, if you have students making videos and they, you know, instead of them having to remember to shoot the B-roll of Times Square or whatever, they can get it.
Well, students should remember to shoot their B-roll.
Oh, all right.
Yes, I know.
Teach. You're right.
I'm just saying.
Shoot your B-roll. No, I know. You got to spray. You got to do it. You got to get it all.
Well, actually, B-roll is a lie.
Yeah, it is. Oh. It's just, you know what? This is what I don't like about TV, is that everything has to be covered by video. And so if you're saying something that isn't visual, it's a thought or a concept, something abstract, you still have to cover it with video, which is inherently not representative.
And I have come to love the jump cut.
Yes, me too. Because then it's the truth. We edit it here.
Yes.
None of this stupid turn around the camera, shoot the anchor going so that you can do an edit that's invisible. I agree with you, Jeff. I'm glad to hear you say that. That's great.
Nonetheless, there are cases where you do want video. You do want to illustrate things. That's fine. You want to teach them and you want it. Have you seen the, what is it called? The is it the sad stock photo feed?
No. Where's that?
Oh, it's hilarious.
Is it on Instagram? Where is it? Sad photo.
Oh. Dark stock photos.
Darkstockphotos.com?
And Twitter. Twitter/darkstockphotos. The one from October 22 is unbelievable.
Twitter is actually a good place for visual feeds, too. I don't know if people realize that, but I follow like history and pictures and stuff, and it's really fun to have those. Oh, these are sad.
These are hilarious.
What the hell's going on here?
Just hilarious.
They're playing Mumbledy Peg.
A bunch of almost naked kids with this.
And
then
grandma's teaching a Mumbledy Peg. And one of the kids, it looks like Mist. That's dark. That is dark.
There's the ladies. What is it? Ladies.
Oh, I'm following this one. Are these really Getty images?
Yeah, as far as I know.
I was going to say woman laughing alone with salad meme about stock art and women eating salad, which is pretty
these are
hilarious.
Great. Oh my God, these are
wild.
Let me see.
Is this, I'm looking up one of them.
Oh my God.
Yeah, Getty Images. Yep. I just did a Google search on the woman
They're
putting
real.
A knife in a toaster.
Yeah.
And it's on Getty Images.
Yeah. So don't do this at home, kids. But I mean, I guess if you're writing an article about stupid things to do in your house, you would want that image.
I feel that you should have every day they should throw up like a write an article with this image challenge.
Yeah.
Oh, I like. I think it'd be super fun.
You do like that one, don't you?
I do.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
So instead of a boxing glove, you want a frying pan to pop out of the TV over here?
That is actually a saucepan.
Okay. All right. Okay.
All right. Oh, jeez.
Okay. This is horrible. I'm following this right now. Follow.
Anyway. Stacey was sighing.
How did we?
Let's not go there. Let's move on.
Moving on.
Because
how to fix Facebook? Farhad has become a moral panic person. His new book is called The Frightful Five.
Yes. The entire Guardian is up. The entire Guardian.
I'm glad you told me that because I agree. The Guardian has now become technology is ruining the world. Let's stop it. Kevin Kelly, who is a good person to ask of Wired magazine and a great writer, told Farhad Facebook should reduce anonymity by requiring verification of real names for real people.
How often can we argue this case?
Yeah.
How often do we remind people that anonymity is necessary for people who are vulnerable? Yeah. It's easy for a white man in America to say everyone should put their real names out there. It's not so easy for a gay man in certain African countries.
You'd like this one, though, Stacey. Eli Pariser, author of The Filter Bubble, and chief executive of Upworthy, okay, says Facebook should open itself up for independent research. In effect, the API that you were talking about. And I think that would be great.
Well, not just that, but also how it runs its various feeds and walls and whatnot.
But that's a lot to ask people of a private company. That's like saying Coca-Cola should give up its recipe so we know what we're drinking.
Well, they could make it available just to academic researchers.
But
they could limit it. Then it's what?
It's hard to control it, and you've got to tell the academic researcher what they're not allowed to say about it.
Right.
I'm trying to get them to give up more data. I think you're absolutely right. That's key. It's going to lead to trust. It's going to be good for them, but it's complicated is the problem.
Yeah, and ask a private business to do that.
Everything is complicated now. And you know what? We always say it's complicated, and we shrug. Or we say, oh, my God, this law will never happen. We can't handle all this. You know, the repercussions are unimaginable. So let's not do anything. I'm like, guys, we live in a complicated age.
Yeah.
Let's sit down and figure this out. I know. I would love to go and be in office just to be like, okay, this is crazy. This is a morass. Let me make some unpopular decisions and then leave.
The last one is the one that killed me.
What it does, though, and then we'll get to the last one. What it does is it says it acknowledges that Facebook is not a traditional business, that its impact on society is not the same as Coca-Cola's, that it has, you know, it has some higher responsibility. And I don't think that that's false. I admit Facebook probably doesn't want that to be how it's seen. But don't you think it's true, Stacey, that Facebook has so much influence maybe has to have, and Google and...
Well, so this is the argument that people made about television or things like showing cartoons, not cartoons.
Television is regulated. Television and ads to kids are regulated.
That's where I was going with this.
Sorry.
And that brought us legislation about, you know, how much airtime that you could devote to ads to kids. And
a good thing.
So, I agree.
Here's what Tim Wu says, and I guess this is what you're talking about, Jeff. Now, maybe you disagree with this. Facebook should become a public benefit corporation.
Now, I don't have any Facebook stock, but...
As a shareholder, you might not like that. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah. Or an employee. I mean, this is notion that communist, that, profit's bad. Profit's the root of all evil. So if we just get rid of some of the profit, then it'll be okay.
Yeah.
Or above, you know, from the Tao researcher, let's get rid of the emotions. Now, I've asked for more... You know, instead of just the emoticons that are there, it would be nice to have, I think that's smart or something like that as one. But Facebook is about relationships. Relationships are emotions. Just because people are exploiting emotions doesn't make all emotions bad. And let's get rid of emotions. It's just baby in bathwater is being thrown out 9 times there or 7 times.
How about Ro Khanna, who is a California member of Congress, who says, Facebook, we want more transparency. You should explain how your newsfeed algorithms work.
Well,
you should explain how you use data and targeting. You should say how you make decisions about third-party verification and removing offensive content.
That I agree with, right? I mean, there's some more transparency. Yes, I think you know, what does that define? The old open up your algorithm is really meaningless.
Yeah, and that's like opening up Coke's secret recipe, only more so.
Vivian Schiller makes a similar point about transparency. I absolutely agree with that.
I think the only thing that matters about the newsfeed algorithm is really visible, which is what is the outcome. And anybody who reads the newsfeed can see the outcome, and you could decide for yourself whether or not you
want
to read the newsfeed.
But everybody's outcome is different.
No, that's right. You have to decide for yourself. No. Am I seeing what I want to see?
I should mention this. First, when we talk about Facebook, I should give the standard full disclosure is that I started the News Integrity Initiative, which got substantial funding from Facebook, Craig Newmark, and the Ford Foundation. I sound like I'm one of those guys at the end of the commercial who's telling you what they really...
Member FDIC.
FDIC. But I also had, last Tuesday, I had an event at CUNY where Adam Mosseri, the head of newsfeed at Facebook, came in and talked for an hour privately with audience development people. And then we had a public event where Facebook presented a booklet that they actually printed, which tries to tell news organizations how they need to be smart in using newsfeed, which is a form of transparency. It's trying to tell you what works, what doesn't. It's trying to put it in a form that they want.
Okay, let's move on to something more, less intractable.
I was like, I'm tired of Facebook. But hey, I've got something super controversial.
Okay.
Well, yes. I think, what do we think about the Google Docs drama?
What's
it's not about queso. So some people yesterday, I believe it was yesterday. Maybe it was Monday. I'm like, where are we in the week? But their Google Docs, they found themselves locked out of their Google Docs because they violated Google's terms of service. And this was really interesting because, people were like, wait, what? Google's reading my docs? And then, wait, what? Google could just lock me out of my, articles?
This is based on the content of the docs?
Yeah, that's
check
the
for certain things.
So if I write a short story that has hate speech in it because the antagonist is hateful, they could conceivably...
If you only store it there, no. But if you share it... And you're distributing
As a reporter, I write stuff in Google Docs and, share it with all kinds of people, my editors, my copy team, whatever, whoever. So
according to Mashable, National Geographic reporter Rachel Bale was locked out of a draft of a story she was writing about wildlife crime.
So the New York Times articles, so it's AI. So
Google says it's an error and they fixed it.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But they said it was one of the experts the New York Times quoted said it was Google's using advanced machine learning and other AI technologies to examine vast amounts of information in real time.
Like reading your docs.
Right. But so it could be an error in the way the AI was created, like all the other sad AI errors, like remember Tay from Microsoft or Google's photos that hated black people.
But it reveals that Google's reading your docs, which I...
Yeah, we knew they were reading them for the purposes of advertising.
Really?
Well, those are mail.
They're not even reading my mail anymore.
Mail.
But they're not even doing that anymore.
Your mail.
You're right. They weren't. Yep.
Reading our Google docs?
This is interesting. Like, I wanted to know, is this everyone or is this also like I have a what is it called? The Google admin, the account you pay for. So I have a paid Google account and some professional companies do this as well. And if my internal docs and memos were being scanned by Google, that would be after I paid Google. This is not, again,
so
the free
all
stuff.
All these people with Chromebooks are giving everything that's on that Chromebook to Google for their perusal?
That's pretty weird.
It's not by a human.
No, I understand. It's machine. So that's the moral panic when people say somebody's reading your mail, but it's not somebody, something, but still. And they can lock you out, whether by accident or intentionally. You don't own that doc. They own that doc.
That was what I thought was most disturbing / something we should probably, that's one of those complicated things we should probably figure out. Google says this was an error. They changed a rule and it automatically flagged a lot of people. But
here's what Google says. They said this yesterday. Technically, we don't read files. Instead, we use an automated system of pattern matching to scan for indicators of abuse. Though it can identify clusters of data that might suggest a violation, the system does not pull meaning from the content, according to a company spokesman. So what that means is, in effect, they're doing a grep for hateful words. And if the N-word is in your doc, they don't look at what's which is frankly even worse. They don't look at what's surrounding it. They just say, oh, you're using the N-word a lot in there. That's hate speech.
Which is obviously dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, okay, so they're not looking at the meaning or context of what you're reading.
Well, that's writing. The problem. It's the same problem that when Google, we've talked about this in the show, when Google started accounting for the authority, reliability, and quality of sources, trying to get hate speech out of search results, search ranking. Well, guess what happened? Some liberal sites that were complaining about hate found themselves demoted.
That's the problem with algorithmic solutions like this.
Yep.
But this is very concerning. I don't. Wow.
I hate, like, to get locked out of a document. I mean, imagine. And we all know that Google is pretty sucky when it comes to trying to solve problems quickly for you, right? No one's like, oh, Google, you're so awesome at customer service. So I think this probably leads to, dear God, Google, so many people depend on your things. You got to make your customer service better. Because, a lot of people are like, oh, the lesson to take away from this is, you know, computers are reading your documents, or that, what is it? Oh, gosh, I forgot the other lesson. Okay.
That you don't own something. That if you're going to create something, whether it's a photo or an article or a short story, you should put it somewhere you own.
Or all this stuff should be encrypted and nobody can read it.
Yeah, if you encrypt
Google,
it now,
not the government, nobody.
Chromebook doesn't really. Well, I guess it does. You could put, there's a mini lock, for instance, a mini lock Chrome extension. You could, in theory, save locally, run it through mini lock, and then put it on your Google Drive. No one's going to do that.
No, it would have to be designed by Google.
Well, no, they have a Chrome extension that's not designed by Google. It's called Mini Lock.
No, I'm saying if you're going to make it easy.
Yeah.
Google well, make another encryption.
But my question, so their terms of service say you're not allowed to post hate speech and other stuff, but I'm not posting it. I'm writing a private document.
Unless you share it. The question is
if you share it.
So this is
only... I think that if you made something public via Google Docs and it had hate speech and Google was put in a position of distributing that, I can see Google saying, oh, no, we have some right to not be the vehicle for this. But that's hard enough to imagine how you police that. But that's no different in a sense from saying that hate speech doesn't belong on Facebook or Twitter. So Google as publisher, blogger, or Google Docs publishing, I get that. But anything short of that, anything that's mine, and I share it with you, Leo, and we have a private relationship, and you asked to see my short story, no, Google should not be inserting itself in there. Now, the next period is, what's Google doing, not just for itself and its own liability, what's it doing in terms of government?
Bale, by the way, says that her account access was restored yesterday. Google says it was a bug, but it still raises to me this very interesting issue. And of course, one response is, well, you shouldn't have your only copy of anything on Google.
Don't write in the CMS.
Don't write in the CMS. Rachel's fact says she's not going to do that anymore. She's not going to write on Google Docs. Although, if you're in a Chromebook and you're, that's all you can do.
I write everything in Google Docs.
Yeah.
Or maybe not everything. I write a lot of things. I mean, because Word? If I don't have to use Word, yay. And
use it in years.
But now maybe you should use Word, because at least you own your document. Of course, by the way, Microsoft Word by default now saves your documents to OneDrive.
Yeah.
Which probably has a similar policy.
Well, it's bad enough that there was a document. The fact that they shut down her entire account. And as Stacey just said, they're not exactly responsive.
Do they? Oh, interesting. Nick Fountain, who does a podcast, says his podcast script, he's a producer of Planet Money, says his podcast script was blocked by Google.
That's an NPR product, for God's sake.
Planet Money has no hate speech on it.
That's a news organization found its account blocked because of what Google read in a script. Wow. That's Google. Guys, wise up. This is why you're sitting in Washington sweating.
Yeah, and if you're going to do something like this, maybe don't do it to journalists because...
Yeah, I guess you're going to... Well, it's interesting is how many journalists use Google Docs. We use Google. You use Google. We use Google Docs.
It's the best for editing because the comment system is real. I mean, it's really nice.
Which means I share all the time.
Right. I mean, Kevin and I share and we prefer, I mean, our other option is who's going to send Word documents back and forth?
I can set you up. I could set you up. You probably could use GitHub and Atom. I mean, it's going to commit to GitHub, so you have this other problem.
Good God, no. See, when you say the words GitHub,
I know,
brain
you don't
like
that either. Okay. And they don't have, there's some issues at GitHub as well.
Yeah, so I thought that story was worth talking about because.
Yeah. Now I'm wondering what I'm going to do with my Pixel book. You want it?
Oh.
Jeff, you're still going to use it.
Oh, you got it.
Oh.
Let's take a break. Jeff's going to demonstrate his new Chromebook. His Pixel book has come. Mine comes next week. My pencil
did you game. Did you already talk about your phone last week? You got it right?
No, I don't. No, but actually, this is an interesting. Oh, you got your, which phone is that? The XL?
The Pixel XL 2.
Oh, well, I want you to talk. Then you have many things to talk to us about. Mine doesn't come. I got the Panda one, the black and white one with the orange button. So I'm not going to get it for weeks.
You have the case, but not the
I got the case. I'm getting the pencil for the Pixel book is coming tomorrow. I'm glad you got yours. I don't know why I'm not getting mine because
I'll talk about it.
We did about roughly the same thing. But Jason Howell got his Pixel 2 XL, and I thought the screen looked pretty washed out. I did not think
it is
a good looking screen.
It's a problem. Nope, it's a problem.
All right, we'll save that. Hold that thought. And yeah, I mean, there are solutions that you can use. People are pointing out Nextcloud. I use a Synology NAS where it stores all my documents locally, and it has Google Docs style collaboration features with somebody else. So there are ways you could roll your own. Maybe that's.
Is there an easy way to do an automated sync with Google Docs? So I have. We talked about this in the past many times.
I wouldn't.
Matt, as I remember.
I wouldn't do it with Google Docs. I would do it with something else. Do you have to do it with Google Docs?
Well, I'm just all invested in Google Docs.
Yeah, well, maybe that's why I'm thinking it's time not to.
Jeff, it's time to change. Change your ways, Jeff.
No, not right in the CMS. Did O'Malley tell you that? Is that like one of...
Okay, that's like journalism 101 these days.
So, yeah, don't
never
write
in the CMS. I've written in so many platforms, and that's always...
Yeah, you should write it locally and then paste it into the CMS.
Yes, although that comes with its own problems.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, that's why some sort of hybrid solution where you write locally that it automatically syncs to a CMS would be interesting. One-way syncing or something. Hey, by the way, our show today brought to you by, literally, our 10 gigabit symmetric fiber internet from Sonic. I love Sonic. And I love our high-speed internet. Now, they're not, I suppose, if you're a business in the Sonic area, you could get 10 gigabit. But you probably don't need 10 gigabit. How about residential gigabit? 1,000 megabytes per second for $40 a month. What? Everybody should have Sonic. And Sonic's rolling out more and more of Northern California, the North Bay Area here, the East. They started up here, the East Bay Area, San Francisco. Listen to what you get for $40 a month. 15 email accounts, a gigabyte of storage, personal web hosting with a new domain. You get home phone service with unlimited local and long-distance calling, fax line service. It's easy to port your existing number over so you don't lose your phone number. And gigabit, 1,000 megabits per second for only $40 a month. And oh, by the way, it's the best internet service provider in the country. All green checks, according to the Electronic Frontier Foundation, because they stand up for privacy. They never cap bandwidth, friendly local customer support, and a price that just is unbelievable. One of the things I love about talking about Sonic, I know a lot of you can't get it, but it just shows you it's possible. And so what you're paying for your internet service that's much more expensive and much less performing is ridiculous. It doesn't have to be this way. And Sonic's customer advocacy paves the way for a better internet everywhere in the United States. So please, if you are lucky enough, and you can find out easily by going to Sonic, SONIC.com/twit. Give them your address. See if you can get Sonic. By the way, if you join the internet revolution at Sonic.com/twit, you'll receive your first month of internet and phone service free. Plus, they do offer a deal with Dish. You'll save $120 on your Sonic bill if you bundle it with Dish. Sonic.com/twit. They literally bring you This Week in Google. Thank you, Sonic. Sonic.com/twit. So you got your Pixelbook, huh? Well, now, one of the things Jeff and I did, we ordered it right away, but we ordered the 256 gig version, and both of us went, what the hell? 128 gigs Chromebook is more than enough. And so you got the $1,000 one as I did, right?
Yeah, I did.
How'd you get it so soon?
Just because, I don't know, I guess I'm just important and loved.
Yeah. Good. And do you like it? How long have you had it?
Yeah, it's beautiful. I went to a Best Buy beforehand so I could you know, just see it. They have them there. It's lovely.
It does look light. Pretty. It's got that same styling that the Pixels have with the kind of the clear top glass
part. The keyboard has a nice travel, as they say.
It does? Oh, good.
Yeah, I can't figure out, the screen size is a little bit different in the sense that when I use TweetDeck, I'm getting less on the screen left and right.
It's 3x2. It's not a widescreen.
So that's fine.
I prefer frankly. I like
it. I was used to what it was. Fine. It's nice. I mean, you know, it's not like the thing about Chromebook is that the hardware is the hardware. The software is the same. You know, I there's no change in life.
Yeah. It doesn't have the light, the colored light on it anymore, right?
It doesn't have that much to do about it. The power brick is.
Oh, look how small that is. Oh, that's
really nice. Really nice. I want to get a few of those. Of course, I got to complain about everything. That's what I do. So what I wanted to do was to surprise you and halfway through the show say, hey, I'm on Skype on my new Pixelbook. I didn't do that to you.
Oh, thank you.
I saw Carson was on vacation. I don't know who's at the board today, but I thought, nah, it wouldn't be fair.
It's Josh.
So I try to get Skype operating.
Yeah.
And I cannot tell you what torture it is. Google,
Are you doing the Android Skype or the web Skype?
No, Android Skype.
Android web Skype. Skype. Or, yeah.
And the problem is that, of course, it's a G Suite account.
Yeah.
And trying to install apps on G Suite, because it acts like I've got to go to, you know, the vice president or something or else in my company, which is me. And so I thought, well, it's going to download all the apps, it'll be fine. No. On this, for some reason, it said the permissions had to be updated on half the apps, including Skype, and it just says go to Play to do it. I couldn't find where to do it. I tweeted last night. I was screaming. I called Google. They left me on hold for 20 minutes. I finally hung up when I figured it out. I finally figured out how to get to the app, and then you'd never know what to click on. I only did it by five or six different ways where I managed to click on the app to get to the page that tells me that it needs things to be updated where I can click the
update. Some of this is Microsoft's fault, I might point out.
No, it's not Skype. This is all the Android apps.
Oh.
It is Android apps through G Suite.
Oh.
It's just a nightmare of nightmare of nightmares. And so I can't rely on being able to remember again because there are like 80 steps to figure it out. I've gone crazy.
But it's designed to do everything you want to do.
Oh. So that drove me nuts. That aside, it is a lovely machine. It is lighter than the old one. It is sleek.
It looks pretty.
The silicon wrist palm pads really feel good.
Now, have you tried tethering it to your Pixel 2 yet? Because it's remember that was one of the features of automatic tethering, right?
I have a grandfathered AT&T account, which won't let me tether.
Oh. I'll haven't try done when I get my, mine. But supposedly, if you just come, you don't have to go through all this. You could just say, oh, I see a hotspot on your phone. I'll use that for the internet.
Yeah.
Because they don't offer an LTE version.
Which still pisses me off, but that's life.
Yeah.
So, no, I love the machine. It seems very, very nice. It is expensive, but it's sleek and beautiful and thin and wonderful. And it's a Chromebook, which I love.
Nice.
And then I have
Pixel 2 XL.
To XL, which feels good in the hand. It's very nice. You know, again, it's so weird that, you know, I had two Pixel XLs because I kind of thought I'd ruin one, but it turns out I didn't. So I was going to send that one in for a $400 thing. And then right before I'm ready to send it in, the screen went black and it won't come back.
Aye.
So $400 goes away. So this one, I compared my working Pixel XL with Pixel XL 2 because I got the same screensaver, the same stuff. Very washed out on the new one. Second problem is that I don't know if it's a burn-in or a temporary image, but if you go to something like looking at all your apps, so the whole screen goes white and you're scrolling, you see the line and the home buttons instantly. It's not doesn't take time to do this. Again, that may be temporary. I don't know. But
wait a minute, you're saying you have burn-in already?
Oh yeah, but I'm not sure. I saw some reference. I'm not sure it's burn-in. It could just be image retention on the screen.
Or but as yes. Google calls it, differential aging.
But you get it. After a while, just go. The best way to see it is to scroll up to see all your apps, right?
Yeah.
And then when I do that, I see a shadow line.
Oh man, I'm thinking this phone is jinxed. This is not a good phone.
It's not a good phone.
The screen is problematic.
I'm really eager for you to get yours and see what you think. But it's, you know, it's faster. The battery, which everybody's been raving about, first day I was at home all day, so it was fine. Second day, I was at 10 in the morning, I was at 60%. I don't know what the heck it was running at. I tilt phase.
40% loss by 10 a.m.?
Today it's okay. So I don't know what I was running. Right now it's at 61% at you know, whatever this is, 10 at night. No.
I'm glad I didn't trade in my Pixel XL, my old Pixel. This sounds very disappointing.
I don't know. I mean, but there's nothing wrong with it. It's a fine phone. Is it worth $1,000? Probably not. It has issues. Google, you know, for this phone that was going to be their special thing, they should have taken more care with this.
I'll tell you what's wrong with it. I think they got a terrible screen. When I looked at Jason's, it felt so washed out. Now, I know they're going to push out new settings, but how's the camera? Camera's good, but you don't care about that.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. The blue when you turn is very noticeable. You're not going
to
see that there.
Yeah, a lot of OLED screens do that. I'm used to that. It doesn't bother me. I might stick with my Note 8. Maybe the Note 8 is the phone to get.
I'm not screaming about it or anything. But yeah, if I have two working Pixel XLs as I did a week ago,
you might go back.
I might. It's a lot of money.
Interesting. Yeah.
That's where I am.
Wow. I like my normal Pixel, my small Pixel.
You're still happy. We should say that Stacy has a Pixel 2, the smaller one. And and by the way, I apologize because last week I was acting as if it's not an OLED screen. It is. It's not an LCD screen. I don't know what I was thinking. It is an OLED screen, but it's an AMOLED screen, not a P-OLED screen, which makes me think it might be a Samsung screen.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But I like it. Looks good still. Ta-da!
Ta-da! Ta-da! Ta-da!
It works.
Ta-da-da-da-da-da! Wow.
What
did
else?
You order Pixel Buds, either of you?
I did. I won't get mine, though.
Yeah.
I think they come at the end of November.
Yeah, mine too. CJ's suggesting that, and I don't know how you feel about this, Jeff, but I am signed up for the Android beta on my old Pixel, and I guess I will sign up for a beta on the 2 XL, because 8.1, which is out now, has apparently some screen fixes.
Automatic or choices?
Don't know. Probably both. And of course, the iPhone 10 is coming out on Friday. But you're not an iPhone user. You're not, because everybody seems to say the iPhone screen is fabulous. Although Apple, and I was curious what you would think about this, you journalists. I got poo-pooed on MacBreak Weekly for my thoughts. But it was really interesting this year. Apple did the most manipulative thing I've ever seen Apple do. Maybe that any tech company do. They parsed who got phones when, whose embargoes were lifted when, in a detailed way I've never seen before. Stephen Levy was among...
I thought that was really interesting, yeah.
Okay, so there were a handful of people who got their iPhone 10s last week. But it was a small number. Stephen Levy was one. David Pogue, Ed Begg did not. Mashable's Lance Ulanoff did, which I thought was interesting. He's not your usual suspects. BuzzFeed, Nicole and Wen at BuzzFeed did. But the Wall Street Journal did not. Joanna Stern did not. She got a one-day wonder. So a number of people got a week ahead. That's not unusual. When the first iPhone came out, it was only the big four: Stephen Levy, David Pogue, Ed Begg, and fourth one, I can't remember, Walt Mossberg, were the four from the, and they were from USA Today, Newsweek, Wall Street Journal, and the New York Times. They were from the big press. That's 10 years ago. Boy, we've changed a lot in 10 years. Newspapers got, as far as I could tell, no advance. But weirdly, even the people who got it a week ahead of time were embargoed till Tuesday. Stephen Levy was the only one that was only embargoed till Monday. He got a 24-hour lead.
Wow.
On everybody. So he
people
got the...
People hate that.
Well, okay. That's not all. A number of YouTubers got phones, but a lot of big publications did not get phones. And I think Joanna Stern didn't get one initially. The biggest upset was John Gruber of Daring Fireball, who's carried out a lot of water for Apple.
Yeah.
Did not get anything. Wow. And later he did. Marcus did, Marcus Brownlee, because he's a YouTuber. So they favored YouTubers. A YouTube site called High Snobiety did. So it was really, Apple really parsed it finely. Clearly they had marketing goals like reaching out to young people and YouTubers and stuff like that. But they were very, but some people got it for instance, Nilay Patel of The Verge, big. I mean, I don't think there's anybody bigger in this business, got it for one 24-hour period, which has the further effect, and this is to me the most damaging thing, of forcing all of these people to do a review within 24 hours.
That's wrong.
So almost all the reviews that we saw, with the exception of Levy, Matthew Panzerino, Nicole Wen, a few people who had it for a week, were based on having the phone for less than a day.
It's not long enough to test a phone.
Not long enough to test battery life, not long enough to look for burn-in and other issues with the screen, not long enough really even to test Face ID and to see how it changed over time and different lighting. It was – and so – there are some who thought that, including some analysts, who thought Apple must be hiding something. It was that weird. So I thought this was now Apple's right to do it. They have a right to do it. That's what happens. I thought it was offensive, not to the people who didn't get phones, but offensive to the public.
Yes,
who have a right to good, solid, well-planned reviews, and didn't get them. So, Stacey, what do you think?
Many things. One, any reporter hates when a company offers an embargo on something and then somebody else actually has an earlier embargo. That's total crap. And most reporters, if they can, they will try to refuse to work with companies that work that way.
Yeah, you can't, right?
You can't say no to Apple. This is a thing. I mean, like, when we were at GigaOM and again at Fortune, we saw a bump every time the Apple reviews came around. So you saw a huge bump in your traffic. And we're talking, million page view kind of days. You know, those were not crazy. And that's all tied to Apple. So it's hard to say no to that. I don't think it's wrong for Apple to go after this audience. I don't know if they're hiding something or they're just like seeing an opportunity to change the way that reviews are done. And it's possible when you go and give your phone to a YouTuber who may be really enthusiastic about technology, they may also be good at it. They may not offer the same tests that a historical reviewer, like somebody who's done it forever.
I'll go a step farther. I think they may be much more susceptible to bias.
To being bribed or...
They're basically being bribed.
And that's true. I mean, Stephen Levy is the shiniest, happiest journalist, I swear, out there. He's a smart man, but my God, I've never seen him write anything negative about the companies he covers. So in his publication, I mean, Back Channel, Medium, now part of Wired, that's just weird. So, yeah, I don't like it, but it's up to the establishment to say, okay, you know what? Screw you, Apple. We're not taking your product at all. Yeah. Most Apple coverage is almost fawning.
And big publications like Recode were limited. I mean, you don't want to miss those views. So they're limited to writing review of the reviews.
Shit.
Yeah. I mean, companies have done this sort of thing. They punish people all the time. Apple's a very vindictive company this way. So.
Yeah. I mean, and that's one of the reasons it's challenging for me to talk about this or anybody or John Gruber, because then you get labeled a whiner. And I don't expect a review unit from Apple, or and I don't take review units from any company. I buy all my phones because mostly because I don't want to have anything to do with these PR people. So I wasn't bit by this because they didn't offer and I didn't accept, but I'm clearly on Apple's, you know, what list. Yeah. And because I'm not sufficiently reverent, I don't know. The fact that John Gruber didn't get one, and I, you know, this, who knows why, but it might have something to do with the fact that from day one, he said the Notch is ugly and a bad idea. He's normally very reverent.
And so, it could just be Apple changing it up and saying, you know what? This is stories. This is not actual data, but I was hanging out in watching my daughter. She was testing for her black belt. So there were lots of like teenagers and young smartphone owners. And most of them were saying, really, there was this conversation I was listening in on, and they were talking about how the iPhone 6 is the best. It's got a headphone jack. They're all excited. They're like glad about that. They were like talking about the X, and they're like, it's so expensive. It doesn't seem like it would be useful. And even my parents don't want it. So I thought that was kind of interesting, because Apple does seem to be doing a harder sell around this phone than normal, but it is a new phone.
If you look at the reviews too, I mean, all the people who had it early, I mean, maybe it's a great phone. Nicole Nguyen says, simply put, Face ID is really effing impressive, but that's because it's invisible. You know, my friend Rene Ritchie, who got the 24-hour phone, says it's the best product Apple has ever made. It's digital trend. Should you buy it? Our tentative response is yes. We can't peel our eyes away from the gorgeous OLED screen, and using gestures to move around iOS is pure bliss. The Verge. One day they had it. The iPhone is clearly the best iPhone ever made. And on and on and on. Are the reviews all positive? Yes. Does it deserve all positive reviews? I don't know. I'll let you know when I get mine. In a couple of weeks. But it's their right to do it. If I were a shareholder, I would say good on them. They're increasing shareholder value. But as a user, readers should complain.
It'll backfire. At some point, it's going to backfire on them. Some point,
I don't know if readers will complain. I don't know.
They're right. They may not complain, but they're going to be taken advantage of because they don't know. They don't see the systemic problem here.
Well, and they'll still read. I mean, I guarantee when somebody gets the phone at, you know, Recode, or when you get your phone, people will still look to see what you think about it if they're the type of person who reads reviews.
Right.
And right now,
I just won't get those million hits because mine will be in 2 weeks. I wrote.
Get it over time.
I said. But yeah. I said I tweeted. Looking forward to my first look instant review of the iPhone in 500 hours. It'll be November 17th. We will have an iPhone 10 in the house because we buy them. I make my I pay for my staff to buy them. So Megan Maroney's getting one, and she got in earlier than I did, so she's getting hers November 3rd on Friday. My wife got in earlier than I did. She's getting hers November 10th. Mine's the 17th. Anyway, it's probably a tempest in a teapot, and I know it comes off that I'm whinging away because I didn't get one.
Oh, the media loves talking about this. I mean, my goodness.
Yeah. I feel like it's unfair.
I was talking with some of my colleagues, and we were all like, ooh, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Stephen Levy got it. Who else got it? What's happening?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I feel like it's a disservice to buyers, and let's hope buyers are smart enough to There's no urgency. And frankly, if you order it today, you won't get it for 6 weeks anyway. So you can.
Yeah, and for $1,000, I imagine most people are going to be like, I'm going to read a bunch of stuff.
Well, and it's not just $1,000 because Apple's strongly pushing AppleCare Plus their extended warranty because the cost of repairing just the screen is $279. So,
well, let's talk about that with Google. So Google extended the, so I bought the extra care for the both these devices. Google extended the 1 year warranty for the new phone to 2 years because they know they got problems. So I think they should give me a discount on the on the extended care.
They did. Yours
discount?
Will, not a discount. You will. I can't remember what the solution was. They either have 3 years or they're going to refund you. I think they're going to refund you. Is I think what they decided to do.
Well, no, because the difference is the extent. Otherwise, I just get rid of the extended care. But that covers accidental damage, whereas the warranty only.
They had some plan with this. I can't remember what it was.
Oh, okay. They haven't told me.
Quit complaining, Jeff. It's solved.
That's what I do. That's what I do here. That's my job.
I really think I might be complaining about the Pixel 2. I'm worried. I should. What I might do is trade it in for the smaller one, as you the one you have, because you have no problems at all, there right, Stacey?
No.
Well, wait a minute. You had the click and buzz problem.
I have the clicking in the background.
Is that fixed yet?
No, it's not fixed yet. So the solution so far is to turn NFC off, I believe. So, it's very soft and I don't notice it most of the time. And I'm not on the phone that often.
So here's what Google's doing for you, Jeff. They're eliminating the deductibles for warranty repairs.
Whoop-de-doo.
Jeff, I think you should go out and drop your phone.
Given that,
oh wait, no, that's user error. Warranty repairs.
See, I never buy these warranties anyway because I just never use a phone that long. So if I drop it or scratch it, big deal. This just in: President Trump has quietly set aside plans to require new cars be able to wirelessly talk to each other, according to the AP, jeopardizing one of the most promising technologies for preventing traffic deaths. This was a proposal last year from the Obama administration that all new cars and light trucks come equipped with the technology enabling them to transmit location, speed, and other information 10 times a second so that your car could talk to another car saying, I'm this way, I'm over here, watch out. And you would, for example, know when a car is about to run a red light and your car could stop. Trump administration has decided to let industry officials say the Trump administration has decided to let the proposal languish, partly Why? Because of a reluctance to impose costly mandates.
But no, this. OK, so this is really strange. The V2V stuff, like, well, one. OK, there's a couple things here. It was supposed to go into effect in 2017, which is now. This has been around for a while. But we've now, for Qualcomm just released their V2V modules that made it super easy to implement this, either through Wi-Fi or cellular. So it could be that there's still some standardization efforts. This may not just be like a Trump is just, his admin just wants to dismantle everything. It may be the tech isn't quite ready just yet. So before we freak out, we should know this a little bit more about the why.
Frankly, it doesn't bother me as much as the Google emoji for the cheeseburger.
That is the stupidest thing ever. Can we just say this is it's fun and silly, but like Sundar, do you really need to? Oh,
he's just
God,
having
so
fun
takes him
with
a
it.
Human. I know. Relax.
I know.
I'll bet he knows a good queso when he sees one.
It started with a tweet from Thomas Beekdahl who said, I think we need to have a discussion about how Google's burger emoji is placing the cheese underneath the burger while Apple puts it on top. To which the CEO of Google replied, we'll drop everything we are doing and address this on Monday. No word yet whether they did. If folks could but agree on the correct way to do this. Actually, it's fun to read if folks can agree. So maybe he's waiting for agreement. Ina Fried says, well, maybe you could leave it up to each hardware maker to decide. But then people would complain about burger fragmentation. The real problem is not the burger, by the way. It's the emoji for beer. Let me see if I can find this, which unaccountably has the foam floating in air. The beer, is the mug is half full, and the beer doesn't touch the foam. The foam is just sitting on the top, which is Very
that's
strange.
That's good foam.
That's strong foam. Maybe you drank the beer through the foam and then the foam just stayed there. It doesn't look like anybody else's. Who's doing these emojis, by the way? Google's the only one with the cheese on the bottom.
Although, I found a Dan Pashman piece from 2011 on NPR that said you should put the cheese on the bottom.
Oh, yeah.
Which orients the cheese tongue word in order to maximize cheesy goodness.
I've actually heard a number of people say that. Plus, it protects the bun. Here's the beer stein. And clearly, Apple is a winner in the beer stein emoji department. Look at what's wrong
Google's
with
Google's. Makes no sense. Wait a second. Apple's looks like root beer.
Maybe it is.
Maybe it's a hoppier beer. It's an IPA as opposed to a lager.
Of course it is.
By the way, is there a queso emoji?
Oh, I wish there were because I could use some right now.
It wouldn't look like Chipotle, I'll tell you that.
Guys, now I'm hungry.
It wouldn't look like yours either. Yours has nothing in it. It has no little bits of pepper.
But at least it has cheesy goodness.
It has no spices.
It has no spices.
You do need spice in your queso because otherwise.
Not enough, but some.
Spice in there. There was just pale yellow cheese.
At least it doesn't feel like mud on the tongue.
Good queso is thick, Jeff. You don't want it dripping off like.
I agree. And Moe's is thick and Chipotle's is water.
Yeah, but look at this. See, it has like little bits of pepper and parsley and stuff in it. That's what it should be like.
You don't want parsley. No parsley.
No parsley.
In your queso?
Okay, that's never mind. I thought the whole idea is it's kind of cheese with some with additional flavor.
Yeah, it's cheese with like jalapeno, maybe some chilies, maybe
cheese, carnation, evaporated milk.
Some people put onion in there. I don't particularly like that.
You're a queso purist. Yeah. You know, you can buy queso in a jar. Is that any good?
Fat-free?
No,
it's disgusting. I don't want fat-free queso.
You know, I've tasted vegan queso. They were putting out samples in my local HEB, and it was not great. Don't recommend it.
Okay, I'm going home tonight, and I'm going to try a few different queso recipes. Oh, not parsley, cilantro. Thank you, Cobra. Of course.
Okay. That makes more sense.
No. Well, cilantro is another kind of parsley, isn't it?
This is the old joke. I sent you to the store to get cilantro, and you came back with parsley.
Well, yeah, you wouldn't.
My husband does that occasionally.
Yeah.
Didn't you actually tweet that?
Possibly. He has
somebody
I know. What kind of cheese would you use in a good queso? Here's a recipe with Fontina. This is the HuffPo. Of course, 17 queso recipes your life absolutely needs. Green chili.
Wow, 17 of them.
17. I'm going to make them all. Smoky queso. Skinny queso dip. Passing that up. Chicken fajita queso. No chicken. Vegan queso dip. Beef queso dip. The quesale machismo dip. Queso fundido.
Now that's a whole other level.
That's a different thing.
Queso fundido.
Queso fundido. Hatch chili con queso.
Ooh, hatch chili anything is so delicious.
Oh, really? Mm. What's hatch chili?
Thanks, New Mexico.
What is hatch chili, boss?
Stacy, what's hatch chili? What's hatch chili?
What's hatch chili?
Can you hear? Oh. Can you hear Jeff?
Hatch. Now I can. Yes. Okay. Hatch chilies are a type of chili that is grown in New Mexico, and they're a good spice that's warm. They're a good flavored spice. Oh. They're very spicy. They're not like ghost pepper. They're like a spice you can eat.
Yeah.
And
sounds very
they're seasonal.
Yeah.
I feel like February might be the season for hatch chilies.
Would you put pimento in your queso?
I hate pimento.
Okay.
It is an unholy dry pepper product.
What about beer? I saw one there that had beer and black beans. What do you think? Number one, a beer. Is beer anything to a
beer? Beer I would do. Beer could work.
No.
Olive oil, white onion, garlic, two hatch chilies, roasted milk, American cheese, Monterey Jack cheese. I wouldn't use American cheese. That's not really cheese.
American cheese melts like butter.
Yeah, well, because it's not cheese.
Well, I would put beans in my queso, but then I'd probably be what? Queso el roja? Rojo?
Con
rojo. Butter beans?
All right.
Con rojo?
Con rojo. All right. Where's my dog? I don't know how we got back to queso. We were talking about serious
my
stuff
fault.
Like cheeseburgers.
I was abusing my co-host.
Okay. Google's we Pixel 2 pre-orders emoji. More than double last year's. So people are buying the... I think people like the premise of a bezel-less screen, but the screen doesn't sound like it's very...
Here's the other weird thing about it. So at the top, it's not as incredibly stupid as that Fakakta Apple Notch, which is the worst design I've maybe ever seen.
Yeah.
This has... You can't see it.
Did
it
you
has
just
a
say
round
edge
that just went off.
Not focaccia.
It has a rounded edge on top.
Oh,
it's kind of a fake round.
Everybody's doing that now. Yeah.
And at the bottom.
Apple's doing that with the iPhone X as well, the curved corners.
Yeah, it's kind of dumb.
Yeah. So Roger Stone got banned from Twitter.
I'm proud to say that the two people who blocked me are Roger Stone and Donald Trump Jr.
Nice. Not the president himself, though.
No, I've been trying. God, Lord knows I've been trying. But.
Yeah.
Do you actually at him?
Of course he does. What do you think?
Yeah.
What do you
know.
Think?
I
actually
like
decided
a waste
to,
of time.
Yeah, I don't know. No, I think he
I don't follow
them.
Him. I refuse to follow him.
I don't follow him either. Account. Yeah, because I want to add to his numbers. Yeah.
So I put him in his own column on TweetDeck so I can just go look at it.
All right. I'm thinking we could just take a break and get to our picks here unless... Oh, I should mention this because that's pissing me off. So the telcos persuaded the FCC, the new chairman, Ajit Pai, to throw out the privacy rules that would prevent ISPs from spying on you and selling your information to third parties. Those are gone. So privacy advocates have gone to the states saying, you know, maybe you could do something about broadband privacy. So, no. Verizon's now gone to the FCC saying, you know what you should do? You know what you really should do? You should ban states from doing it. You should say, no, that's a federal. That could only be a federal law.
Well, California has actually already started taking these steps.
Lobbyists for Google, Verizon, Comcast, and AT&T collectively killed that proposal in California.
Well, that's because they don't want state-by-state rules.
Well,
which
I understand
makes sense.
That. We need a federal rule. They told lawmakers the new law would embolden Nazis, increase pop-ups, and harm consumers.
What? Nazis bearing pop-ups.
Yeah.
That's what I'm just saying.
What? The EFF, by the way, had praised that law and said it's a great template for states who want to stand up to giant ISPs and protect broadband consumer privacy.
But it would embolden Nazis.
So that bill is gone, by the way. I like that bill as well. No.
Texas won't ever do it because AT&T is headquartered here. Also, we've never met a telco lobbying bill that we haven't signed.
Yep. And of course, Pennsylvania, home to Comcast. So, you know. This is a sad story. You know, we had those terrible fires here. What I didn't know is that the millions of dollars worth of documents from the founding fathers of Silicon Valley, David Hewlett, and William Hewlett and David Packard, were burned in that wildfire. A company called Keysight Technologies had them. It was a spinoff of Agilent, which was an HP company. They had put them all in a modular structure, the business and personal papers of Hewlett and Packard. Appraisers said they were worth up to $2 million in 2005. HP staff archivists said previously they've been kept in special flame retardant lined vaults, but this company just threw them in a shed and they went up in smoke. They're gone.
Of course, the funny thing is now there would be no such thing as documents because it's all Google Docs.
Yeah, but that's why you got to take good care of them.
Well, and we have digital. I mean, there's actually, I think, very recently an XCKD, whatever, on digital storage technologies or lifestyle of storage. And it was pretty hilarious and true. So when you store these things, if you don't have the program to open it,
I know.
It might as well be
gone. If you put them on zip disks,
yep.
Forget it. The great thing about...
I just threw away a zip disk just 2 days ago. My husband was like, should you throw this away? Do you know if it's cleaned off? I was like, A, nothing important. B, who's got a zip drive?
Do you have a zip drive? Yeah, exactly.
No.
The great thing about digital data, writes XKCD, is it never degrades. Hard drives fail, of course, but their bits can be copied forever without loss. Film degrades, paint cracks, but a copy of century-old data file is identical to the original. If humanity has a permanent record, we're the first generation in it. Amazing. Oh, this is the one praising it.
Now, yeah, hold on.
Now let's find the one condemning it.
Previous. Boom. Digital resource lifespan. It's 1909.
I got it. 1909.
XKCD.
Oh, number 1909. Yeah, this is a little bit later. He wrote that at 1683. Go fast forward 300 panels. Book on subject will work forever. PDF. Web database site goes down. Backend data not on archive.org. Java front end no longer runs. Mobile app. Broken on new OS, not updated. Analysis software, also broken on new OS, not updated. Interactive CD-ROM, CD scratch. New computer has no CD drive anyway. Library microfilm collection still works.
I once had a great... Elizabeth Eisenstein is the great scholar of Gutenberg. Drink. And she bragged. I had a conversation with her. I interviewed her for Public Parts. And she said quite proudly... Gutenberg's Bible's around 500 years later. Name any of your modern stuff that's going to be around 500.
Paper's not a bad medium if it's acid-free. You know what's the best medium?
Was it
medium?
Paper or was it vellum?
Yeah, exactly. There were
some in vellum, some in paper.
Vellum is leather, right? It's cowhide.
Yes.
And then papyrus, which is made from reeds, many papyri still exist thousands of years later.
Or we could chisel it on a rock.
There you go. Like Hammurabi's
Hello,
Code.
Rosetta Stone.
The New York Times, talk about Evanescent, is now available as a Tor Onion service. Actually, this is really good news for people who are in countries where the Times is blocked. There is
I first read this as a New York Times Onion edition.
Yeah, really. There is a... Let me give you the... Well, I don't want to give you the address. Well, I'll give you the address. NYTimes 3xbfgrah.onion. You have to use a Tor browser, but that means people in China and other places where the Times is fully blocked now can read the New York Times. And I think that's a great idea. Facebook does this. They've done this for a long time. ProPublica does it. I think that's really great.
It is. Yeah. Can I complain about one more thing in the rundown?
One more thing.
So Google now, when I want to see what's going on in other countries, when I want to get a sense of other languages, I go to google.de, google.fr,
google.co.uk.
You can't do it anymore. And it's Google. No. And I have friends. I have a very good friend who's German who lives in London. And every time he tries to go to German stuff, wants to translate it. Google, let us decide this stuff and let us decide it easily just by going to the other domains. You can evidently go to a settings thing somewhere. But you have to change the whole settings for the Chrome. Jesus, Google, it was fine. What are you mucking around? Just leave it. Leave it. It's Google. It works. Enough.
Well, so how are they justifying this?
Can you explain it, Leo? I really couldn't understand the rationale.
It could be in response to countries like France and Germany and the right to be forgotten. So if you wanted to see what was, let's say you're in Germany. And an article has been erased in the German Google at google.de, thanks to a request to the right to be forgotten, or GPRD, GDPR. Then you could go to google.com or google.eu or somewhere else and get it. Is that why?
No. They said here... the change isn't supposed to affect how Google handles legal requirements such as the removal of right to be forgotten.
Okay.
Google says it's making the change because 1 out of 5 searches is related to location, and the company feels it's critical to offer location information to provide the best results.
I thought they'd always do this. Because when I was in France, even though it's my account, I'm logged into my account, I get google.fr.
Which is ridiculous.
I thought I always did this. They always did this, though.
Well, but what
can't you go to the bottom of the page?
You could choose to type in google.de if you wanted to go to Germany, and you could do that. Now you can't do that.
Can't you go to the bottom of the page and say, I'm not where you think I am?
There's some kind of thing.
They used to be able to do that.
No, that's not there.
Yeah, people want local results, whether they want them or not.
Google!
Jeff Bezos' heart breaks a little. Reading Albany's Amazon headquarters pitches. You know Amazon's looking for a second headquarters. Cringing as he scanned the section touting the city as the economic and cultural core of New York State's capital region, Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos reportedly felt his heart break a little while perusing Albany's pitch to host the company's new national headquarters. Oh, geez, he said. You can tell they put a lot of work into this sad presentation. They even provided a concept sketch of our headquarters across the river from their little Amtrak station, said Bezos, noting that the package included a custom-made SUNY Albany Great Danes football jersey with Amazon written on the nameplate, laid out the many ways a new $5 billion campus would benefit from being situated nearby such landmarks as the New York State Museum and the Egg, a performance arts center the proposal referred to as iconic. It talked about how the Port of Albany has one of the biggest grain elevators in the country or something, and they keep calling themselves the next Tech Valley. Bezos said, God, I don't think that I have the stomach to read the section about how much we'll love their tulip festival. This is The Onion, but boy, it sure is good.
It is. And I can hear Bezos laughing when he reads it, too.
Yeah, that honking, famous honking laugh is exactly what I heard, too. Well, I thought of that when you mentioned, or when we were talking about Onion Ratter. I thought, oh, what, The Onion. I love the Jeff Bezos article. Anything else we want to talk about? Stacey, any IoT news that you...
Well, I'm going to cover it in my pick.
Okay, so. Nice. How about you?
Two for one.
How about you, Mr. Jeff?
No, Jones? I got in my last complaint.
Last complaint. All right, let's take a break, and we will get our picks of the week in moments. But first, a word from Capterra. So many times people call my radio show and say, hey, my boss said I have to find software for our business. What do you think about doggy daycare software? Is there any really good stuff out there? And I have to say, I don't know, but that's probably better than Googling doggy daycare software. I got a better solution, Capterra. It's a free website with hundreds of thousands of reviews from real users like you for 400 different categories of business software. I wonder if they have doggy daycare. I just made that up. I bet you they have like kennel software and stuff like that. Yeah, kennel software. Here we go. So did you know that there are many, many choices in kennel software? But wait, you might say, how do I choose? You could Google this, by the way. You wouldn't get nearly this complete. So what you do is you go over on the right to the filter results. Say, now, you know, I only want to see 4-star reviews. I want one that's web-based, and I want pet birthday tracking and photo management and pet grooming. Now I'm going to filter the results. And we're going to narrow it down to 16 products. You can look at the thumbnail descriptions, learn more if you need. How about Ginger, the leading cloud software for pet daycare? Look at that. Or Paw Loyalty. It's more than software. Or Petizek. I'll add them to my comparison chart. Press compare now. Then I've got, I love this. Oh, they're going to say, how'd you hear about us? Make sure you say podcast and make sure you say TWIG. That's how I heard it. And then you're going to look in this and chart, and you're going to get everything you need to know, what platforms, how much it costs, additional features, screenshots. But the best part is more than 400,000 reviews from actual users. They're carefully vetted. This is really a great solution. I don't know why more people don't know about Capterra, but I'm doing my best to spread the word. Don't wait. You won't waste your time on free trials that go nowhere. You won't get, nobody's going to connect with you or call you or anything. That's not how it works. It's free. You don't even have to sign up. You don't have to give them any information. CAPTERRA.com/twig. Let them know you heard it on Twig to find the right software for your business at absolutely no charge. 200,000 software user reviews. 200,000. 400 categories. Every possible category of business software, medical management, church software, accounting, architecture, legal, and on and on and on. I mean, it's really great. Cloud management, compliance. Capterra, CAPTERRA.com/twig. And we thank them for their support of This Week in Google. Stacy, kick it off with your pick of the week, will you?
Okay. This week's pick of the week is come to me.
I got mine today, too, or yesterday. It's the Echo Silver.
It's the Echo Silver.
Anastasia.
Anastasia. No, it is the Amazon. Oh, there's the Amazon label. I was trying to give it to you guys. Amazon Echo Plus. And so everybody, silence your Madam A's.
Okay.
Well, do you actually, I don't know if it's going to sound different or not. It basically sounds a little bit better than the original Echo. But the important part here is this has Zigbee. Mine came with a Philips Hue light bulb.
So in effect, oh, that's cute. One, that's cute.
One Hue light bulb.
So it, in effect, it replaces the hub.
Well, so here's the thing. If you are like me and you already have a home hub, I'm not going to recommend this because if you've got a hub, you probably also have something like that runs Z-Wave, which a bunch of other devices have. I guess
like the SmartThings hub does Zigbee and Z-Wave, right?
Wink and SmartThings both do Zigbee and Z-Wave. And I think that's a better way to go for now because there are still lots of those devices out there. The other thing to know about this is that Amazon, oh, I just whacked myself in the head with it. It's heavy, substantial. Actually, it's plastic.
They say it has better speakers, though, so it must be.
It does have better. Yeah. I can play it for you if you'd like.
No, it's all right. We wouldn't know because it's, you know.
I've got a dot next to me, so you can compare the dot to the Echo.
That's pretty cheesy, yeah.
But what was I going to say about this? Man, now I forgot. Oh, it only does bulbs.
What?
So when I asked it to turn off the lights in my room, it only did the bulbs. And actually, this was not just this. This is Amazon's new. So tied to this, Amazon changed their interface for the Madam A app. So what you've got now, and I'll turn my brightness down a little bit so you guys can see. I'll also turn off night light.
But it does do everything that Echo does normally.
Yes, it does.
It's a complete. But, in other words, it would be a reasonable replacement if you're buying an Echo right now.
But it's got a normal.
It's more expensive.
Echo would be cheaper.
Yeah.
Normal. So if you don't, it also adds.
More.
I should say, it has the direct calling capability that the new Echoes have. The old Echoes don't have this. Okay. But here's what happened: the interface is now different on Madam A. I don't know if you can see. So
yeah, it's very different. It's totally different.
This looks more like SmartThings, something like that. Yeah. And what you can do is you can now set groups. So I've got, I don't know if you can see my master that is Madam A enabled. That means when I stand in my master bedroom, I've grouped all the lights in there and a fan to be under the Echo that's in the master bedroom. So when I walk in there and I say lights on, it's supposed to turn the lights in that room on. So I no longer have to say turn on master bedroom. In reality, all that does is turn on bulbs. So it's only working certain devices. It doesn't do all of them. And I'm wondering if that's because they just started with bulbs or that's part of the bulbs and Zigbee are good friends. So this is something for the Amazon Plus. I don't know. But that's kind of two things I'm telling you about now. But those are my two picks. Or one is really not a pick. It's just advice. Like, it's a good product, but don't buy it if you already have a hub.
I got the Echo Look.
Oh, I declined that. You know, I said.
Yeah, they didn't even tell us. They just, I just went there and said, your invitation is ready.
Oh, they told us. You know, I wanted to do the fashion stuff, but I didn't want to spend that much money on it.
I know. So I did it so you don't have to. So it has.
Well, when you're done with it,
I can send it to you. Would you like it?
Yeah, because I just didn't want to spend out of my own.
No, you should have it. I don't need it. So I wish you could see this better. There's no way to see these pictures on the web, is there? I don't know. So what it does is I go up every day. I go up to in my office. I go up to the Look and I say, Echo, take a picture, and it takes a picture. By the way, look what it does with the picture, which is kind of cool. It blurs it. First of all, it zooms in, it crops it, and then it blurs out the background. So you're kind of like standing right out there, so you can really see your outfits.
Well, that's so the AI can really see your outfits.
Yeah. Some of my outfits maybe aren't the best. And then this is why I'm sending it to you, Stacy. And then this one, I don't know what happened. It took a picture, but it wasn't me. It was like it took a picture of the TV. I guess I didn't have it pointed right. So it will Siri's talking to me. Go away, Siri. Nobody wants you. So then you can send it the style check. And I created a comparison. And it said, rightly so, that this outfit was, see, it's got the yellow check. That was better than that outfit. That one I look like, I don't know, an Uber driver. This one, this was weird. I thought my suit looked better than the sweater, but it's, but and they rate it based on a variety of criteria. And they also give a percentage weighting. So it was actually pretty close. What's working in this look? Pieces work better together. Compare it to another look. You can add another photo. So you can give it your outfits and compare. You know, it's, I mean, it, that's it. It has a terrible speaker and no jack, so you can't get better audio out of it.
Yeah, so that's why. And, you know, I'm actually, as I'm thinking about right-sizing my Echoes, and I was actually going to dump the Echo Show.
Oh, I like the Show. I use that all the time.
Well, nobody calls me on it because nobody wants that
in the
house. And, no, that's okay. No one calls me on it.
Plenty.
Except for Leo and Jerry Itchbit, who I met and is very nice.
I won't call you. I won't call you. Don't worry.
And I can't watch my Corgi videos on YouTube on it anymore. So
oh, I know.
Like,
that's annoying. And I'm hoping that YouTube will rethink that. That was terrible. So I'll trade you. I'll send you a look if you'll send me your Show.
Oh, okay.
That's not really fair. The Show's $30 more. I'll tell you what. I'll trade you. I'll trade you for your Show. I'll trade you a look, a dot, and a player to be named later.
I don't want any more players. Also, I'm getting rid of the dash.
Would you like the Harman Kardon Evoke, the Cortana player?
Oh, the Cortana that was so exciting.
Would you like that? I'm trying to right size too. I have Echoes. I have practically have Echoes in my shoes now. I have Echoes, way too many Echoes.
I have one that I just got as a like a speaker gift.
Oh,
I'm like,
man.
What
I don't need that.
In this room right now, I have 3 Echoes.
Yeah, I don't need that.
So that makes me think, what would Maxwell Smart have for technology if the Show were starting today? Would he have an Echo in his shoe?
Yeah. Hello, Chief. This is my shoe Echo. All right, Jeff.
Oh, right. My turn. Where was I here? I haven't.
Okay, we already did the Halloween costumes when you weren't hurt here.
Don't worry. It's fine. Employees anonymously share which tech companies don't pay fairly and which ones they want to leave. Some really interesting stuff here is that Netflix employees are really friggin' happy.
No kidding.
They're the happiest by far. So they asked, I forget how many people did this. I mean, it was not a scientific poll. But it was a good number of employees. So Netflix employees.
Look how far down Apple is. They don't think they're paid.
Yeah.
Did they do women and men? Because that would have been interesting.
Yeah.
Would have been very interesting. Huh. So Netflix is on top. Like
4,174 people. But all of them. So I don't know how many Netflix employees.
But yeah. I mean, it's But Dropbox next, Facebook is third, NerdWallet, Twitch, Snapchat, Tableau. Google's pretty far down there because Google has all these other kinds of employees now.
Right.
Who probably aren't as happy.
Yeah.
Amazon's way down. That's not terribly surprising. Then they asked,
I'm interested in
changing my job.
Yeah.
Right. Netflix, again, happiest.
Wow.
Most of them say no. 20, a couple percent say no. But Groupon, 90-some percent.
90% of Groupon people said, yeah, I want to change my job. I'm not happy.
Google looks to be about 58%. I say about because
Uber
it's
just Uber employees are happier than Google employees in this respect.
Well, they're waiting for their
and
payouts.
Apple. Google's happier than Apple. Apple's happier than Amazon. And they're all happier than Twitter. And Microsoft.
And of course, if you look at the compensation satisfaction versus job change interest, it's a correlation, not surprisingly.
Oh yeah, yeah.
More so you make Netflix folks think they're fairly compensated and aren't looking for jobs.
Yeah. Interesting.
This is
I found that really interesting. Yeah. The article is in Business Insider and it is a survey by
I forgot. Sorry.
Somebody.
Somebody.
Oh, the Blind app. So you have to use the app called Blind that is designed to survey to do this, I guess. Yeah. Sounds like secret surveys. So I don't know. Is this crazy? Does anybody still use an Amazon Kindle? I do.
Oh, I'm getting mine. It just, after 3 months,
I got the new Oasis.
From Alaska.
Yeah.
Oh.
This is the newest Kindle. This is the one, it's a little pricey. It's over $300. It's waterproof, IP, I can't remember the number, but it's 2 meters for up to an hour. So it's, I mean, it's really waterproof. It has.
Is it float?
That's a good question. That's a very good question. The battery life, they say, is much improved. I have to say, it's a much faster processor. The effect, if you could show the others, maybe if you could show a close-up of the screen, I could show you the page turn. The page turn is much cleaner than before. It's just, it's almost instant, and they don't have that. If there's a graphic, you'll have a weird flicker, but if you're just going from text to text, it's very clean, very fast, without any of that flickering. I guess this left hand, or it goes either way, the right hand side, depending on how you hold it, contains the battery. That's why it's got much better battery life. I'm weirdly puzzled by the. It's too bad they didn't do a Type C charger. It's a micro USB charger, but given you're only going to charge it once every few weeks, I guess I can live with that. On off switch and a charger. The only thing it has, it does come with LTE. You know, their WhisperSync built in. It has, you know, pretty much all the same features. 300 DPI is, you know, they say the paper white backlit, very nice, easy to read. You can adjust the brightness, of course. I'm using it with Wi-Fi, but you can also use it with LTE. I have to say, it's very light, very easy in the hand. It's, you know, easy to hold.
Can you flip it if you get tired of holding the book in that hand?
Totally flip it.
Oh, nice. Okay.
It's very easy to turn the page by touching the screen, but it also has physical page turn buttons, forward and backward. You see how nice the page turn is? So the main reason I use this is so I can read in bed, because it's not as bright as even a very directional light. So you can read in bed without disturbing your partner. And so it's really good for that. Now, I have to say I'm disappointed. The other reason I got it is they say it'll play Audible books. And it will. It has a section for audiobooks. And it sees your whole Audible library, which is nice. I can filter it down to just Audible stuff. And here's my whole Audible library. I can download it. But it doesn't have any speakers, so you have to pair it via Bluetooth to a Bluetooth speaker, which I did. I actually paired it to an Amazon Echo. That worked very nicely. But I can already listen to Audible books on Amazon Echo, so I'm not sure what the real advantage is here. And it doesn't. The one thing I wanted it to do I can't remember the name of it, but where as you're listening, it highlights the text like karaoke, and it doesn't do that, which is a little bit disappointing. It specifically doesn't do that. So you can either, when you listen to a book, you're in an audible interface. You actually have the Audible app up there. You don't see the text, which is extremely disappointing, because that was my favorite feature. When, you know, they call it immersive reading, when you have the audio and you're watching the text. Otherwise, though, it is a really nice Kindle. And if you still are, if you don't use a Kindle on your tablet, you like the e-ink for whatever reason, I think this is a very nice reader. I'm pretty happy with it. And boy, it's light. It's very light. It would be really nice. I don't expect to have a speaker, but it would really be nice if it did the immersive reading. I thought that was such a nice feature. And, of course, you could
do
that.
Can you speed that up? I read so fast, I think I would get behind. So I'm curious, like...
What do you mean? Speed up the audio?
Well, I guess...
You're not... Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, you don't want to speed... let me see, actually. That's a good question. Because some audiobook readers, I think the Audible audiobook reader will let you read at a faster pace. Let me see.
Yeah,
let me see if I can
up
do
to 200%. It's like listening to me all the time.
Yeah, this has speed. In fact, it'll go 300%.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, you can speed it up. And I presume then if it had immersive reading, it would speed up, but it doesn't have immersive reading. So who knows? It has a store you can buy, as, you know, unlike your iPad, which, you know, the buying is separated from the reading. But, yeah, I'm happy with it. I really am. I'm very happy with it. I got it because I want to read in a tub, and B, I want to take it on a trip. We're going on a sail. My son and I were sailing around the Caribbean for Christmas, And it'd be nice. I thought it'd be nice to have something that's a little waterproof. But you're right; it doesn't float, so I'm gonna have to attach a floaty to it. Because who cares if it's waterproof if it sinks?
Goodbye, Kindle.
And
well, you've got an hour to get it, right?
Yeah, yeah. I can die if I get it. And I just dropped it. And that concludes.
Oh, one last question. Or you conclude. I read somewhere that I could run the virtual SIM on this phone as my Fi and then still have my physical SIM in here with my AT&T. Do you know if that's true?
I don't know if that's true. It would be a virtual a dual SIM.
Dual SIM,
yeah, because the eSIM doesn't require a SIM. I don't know. That's a good one.
When you get it.
I will, because I have other SIMs, so I could try it.
Yeah.
I will try that for you and let you know in a couple of weeks.
All right, now you can go goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Actually, I'm trying to keep Stacey from eating. I'm going to keep doing this. So Stacey's not going to eat. She's going to be very hungry.
Stop it.
I will just leave.
Stop it. By the way, somebody's saying, does it read text? Yes, it has a very good voice for reading text. But again, it doesn't have a speaker, so you have to pair it to a Bluetooth. But it has an accessibility mode that reads all the controls. It would actually be great for accessibility. And I think the out loud reading sounds pretty human. Sounds pretty good. So, yes, recommend it.
Is it using Amazon's Polly?
Maybe. I can't play it for you because I don't have a Bluetooth speaker paired. But it's a female voice. And it's, it's very good. It's better than it used to be. And I didn't mind it before, but now it's like you could really listen to it, I think. Well, we've come to the end of another This Week in Google. It's time for us all to break and eat some queso and wear our fine queso shirts. Jeff Jarvis lives the queso life.
What? No.
In beautiful Manhattan. Manhattan? He is a professor of journalism at the City University of New York. Blogs at BuzzMachine.com, is the author of many fine books, including What Would Google Do? Public Parts, Gutenberg the Geek, and Geeks Bearing Gifts. Thank you so much, Jeff. It's great to see you again. Stacey Higginbotham, the queen of IoT. Stacey on IoT.com. Subscribe to her free newsletter. It is a must read. And then listen to her podcast with Kevin Toefel. And she joins us, along with Jeff, almost every Wednesday to talk about the world, life, and more. And she hasn't punched anybody yet.
No, not even when I was there last
Not even
week.
When you could. You were very
Wait
gentle.
Till we get to the case off. This is going to be tough. It's going to be tough. You're going to keep us apart.
We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern. The new time will be 21:30 UTC because we're going off daylight saving time. I hope you will join us and watch live. If you do, please hang out in the chat room too. At irc.twit.tv. And of course, on-demand audio and video always available at twit.tv/twig. Or wherever you get your podcast, subscribe. Make sure you got it each and every week. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you next time on Twig. Bye-bye.